Sunday Sport on RTE Radio 1.
Now, earlier, of course, this afternoon, we spoke with Ronnie Whelan about Liverpool's last magical domestic season in England, all the way back in 1990. Well, there was quite a bit of magic happening domestically here in Ireland that year, too, when the FAI Cup final was contested by a non-league club from Dublin and a First Division side from Wicklow. Here's Barry O'Neill.
As the country was preparing for the Italian 90 finals, another piece of Irish soccer history was just concluding in the early summer. Little-known St Francis Football Club, a non-league side from the Liberties, captured the country's imagination as they reached the FAI Cup final in their first season in the competition proper. The club was founded in 1958 by the chairman and secretary John Hyland, who decided there was a need for a schoolboys team. Its players rose through the ranks, remaining a schoolboy side for 10 years. In 1968, with the players maturing, they became an adult team. In their first season, they won the FAI Junior Cup. 15 years later, in 1983, they repeated that success. By then, St Francis had acquired a new ground in Baldonald and a new manager in Pete Mahon. The former Drumcondra League of Ireland player had recruited a new team during his 8 years in charge, persuading five ex-League of Ireland players to join the club. Players like 38-year-old Martin Kerr, former Bray star Greg Coleman, and his brother Trevor. St Francis in the 1980s had moved up to the Leinster Senior League, but the 1990 FAI Senior Cup crusade was the stuff of legend. The non-leaguers went into their first round match as 1,000-1 outsiders against First Division side Kilkenny. It was a 1-0 win for St Francis, who straight away adopted the tag Giant Killers. 2 weeks later, on the 25th of March 1990, a second round tie ended 2-2 at Cove Ramblers, but a thumping 3-0 win back in Dublin gave St Francis a cup quarter final away to a First Division side for the third time in Newcastle West. And again, a 1-0 result put the Liberties club in a dream semi final against top flight opposition Bohemians. Many said that Bows at Dalymount Park would be a step too far, but again, the non-league St Francis were ready to tear up the cup script.
Tonka Park, where today St Francis from the Liberties came in search of a cup dream. For Bows fans, the prospect of a worrying 90 minutes. The throngs from the Liberties had a few more heart stoppers too. On this occasion, Derek Swan shooting across the goal. No goals at half-time then, and the cup dream was still alive. And it was Francis who got the first clear-cut opportunity of the second half. A nicely worked free kick, coming eventually to Terence Hilliard and his pile driver forcing the best from Dermot O'Neill. But just as Bow started to turn the screw, the story, like all of the best cup stories, took a sudden and dramatic twist. The free from Martin Kerr, Trevor O'Reilly poked the ball forward to find Brendan Toner, and John Murphy was there for the magical finish. Bows had one more chance to level it, but the effort was over the crossbar and the Dalymount faithful had gotten the message. Still, there were a few more nail-biting minutes to go before Oliver Cooney's anxiously awaited long blow on the whistle and then victory, glorious victory. And as the saying goes, there'll be celebrations down Francis Street tonight.
Bray Wanderers accounted for Derry City with a shock win in the other semi-final, and the stage was then set for a non-league club to appear in the FAI Senior Cup final for the first time in 50 years, St Francis against Bray Wanderers.
Bray Wanderers then, in their change strip of white shirts, green shorts, will kick off the game, playing from left to right. St Francis, who won the toss for the choice of colours, are in green and white hoops, as is traditional for them. So after this, Conor McDermott. McDermott against Kerr, and McDermott pulled down by Kerr on the edge of the box. With Martin Kerr, along with Ken Gibbons, the rock on which the St. Francis defence is built. Big throw into the box. They all missed it. Nugent has got the ball out of this, and it's a penalty. A sensational decision, a handball against Trevor Coleman. So John Ryan, five of whose goals in the for Graham Cup at the spot, makes it 1-1. McDermott's gone on a good run. Still he's there. And Ryan. And still it's Ryan. And the shot brings the goal! It's Ryan against Matthews. And there's the hat trick! And for only the second time in the history of the FAI Cup, a hat trick has been scored in the final. And right into the record books goes John Ryan. And there's time for no more. And the cheers resound around Lansdowne Road, saluting the triumph of Grey Wanderers.
St. Francis were denied by a memorable John Ryan hat-trick, but it was a fairy tale journey in Irish domestic football that few will forget. It's a journey in Irish domestic football that in the following 30 years has not been matched by any non-league side, and it's quite likely that it ever will. 33,000 people went to Lansdowne Road on the 13th of May 1990. And while the non-league side didn't lift the cup, Bray Wanderers were deserving winners. For St. Francis, their dream was already realised in what was one of the greatest journeys by any team in Irish sport.
Certainly will be hard to see anything like that ever happening again. That was Barry O'Neill with what happened back in 1990. But we can now hear about what happened back in 1990 with the two managers on the day, Pete Mahon of St. Francis and Bray Wanderers winning manager that day, Pat Devlin. Thank you, lads, for joining us.
Hello, good afternoon, John.
Pat, let's just start with, because people think of 1990 and they do think of Italia 90, they think of the World Cup. So maybe you can just give us an outline of what was the state of domestic soccer at that stage in the League of Ireland.
Well, you know, as I said, Jack Charlton had come in and Liverpool, I think, won the league that year. But domestic soccer is sort of as it is. I mean, it was never going anywhere. And now all of a sudden, St. Francis are sort of looking really good. I mean, people didn't look at St. Francis as a great team, but I can tell you we did, because they had a great record in junior football and the Leinster Senior League. They were a fantastic outfit. And there was no shock to see them get into the final. Now, I think the result against Bowes was a fantastic result, but they fully deserved to get where they were. And then it all took off because, as I said, particularly with the League of Ireland, I mean, the last thing the League of Ireland would want is for a non-league side to win the Cup. And we're now representing the whole league because we're now a first division team. But people sort of forgot that, you know, 5 years prior to that, we were a Leinster Senior League team as well. So even though it was a fairy tale for St. Francis, and they absolutely totally deserved to be where they were, and you should never underestimate them because we're a very good side and we had seen them on many occasions and we knew all about them, we weren't taking anything for granted. It turned into an unbelievable carnival atmosphere, and the media got a huge spin out of it. And I remember talking at the time, and I said, "You know, fellas, be careful here because we don't want to get dragged into something." But in actual fact, it was fantastic because all the pressure really went on to St. Francis because it really was a fantastic story.
Well, there you go, Pete Mahon. Did you feel like all the pressure was on you?
I don't think so, no, not really, because we had got to the final against everybody's expectations. I mean, nobody. We had to qualify for the FAI Cup through the Intermediate Cup, and you know, we got to the final. I think on merit, we beat four League of Ireland clubs along the way, and. I don't think we really found ourselves under pressure at all because, you know, I just felt at the time that all the pressure was on Bray because they were a League of Ireland club, and as Pat said there, nobody wanted to be remembered as being beaten by a non-league team in the final of the FAI Senior Cup, that's for sure.
And it's funny, Pat, that you mentioned that as well, because I saw that Dermot Judge, who was your captain on the day, one of the things he said when he was talking about it, he said that managers from other League of Ireland clubs were coming up to him and saying, "You cannot lose because it makes the League of Ireland look bad."
Yeah, there was that, but, you know, I mean, I have to say, from a personal point of view, the respect I had for St. Francis as a football team, because don't forget this, at the end of the day, it was a game, and obviously it was a game we wanted to win. But Lansdowne Road, you know, I mean, none of the lads ever played there. It was a first to be in Lansdowne Road. That alone was, you know, daunting for some of the players. We actually insisted on training in Lansdowne Road that particular before the game, and that was unheard of as well. I remember Dr. Tony O'Neill said, no, he was the secretary at the time. I said, well, look, we insist on it. So I brought them there, and the point I was making about the pressure was that, yes, there was a hell of an amount of pressure on us because we were the League of Ireland club, and all the League of Ireland clubs would have wanted us to win. Now, not all of them, because I think, in fairness, a lot of the independents would have wanted St. Francis to win because it was a fairy tale and it was great atmosphere around it. But we felt that all the media and all the circus surrounding the media was really looking forward to St. Francis. And I said, well, okay, let's try and turn this around to our advantage and let it all go that way. And we've done our homework on St. Francis. We watched them, I think, 10, 12 times prior to that. We trained in Lansdowne Road. We had a team that was well-rested. Francis, unfortunately, had to play nearly, I think, 10 games, where we were rested for 3-4 weeks. So it was a unique situation. Peter's right. No one, you know, in the League of Ireland would want us to lose. But at the same time, you know, the respect that we had for us as a team, we had a lot of work to do. Some very good players, Gary Matthews, Trevor Coleman, Stephen O'Reilly, Mark Kerr, Ken Gibbons, you know, really were a good side, and we had to do our work on them. And we did, and I got the players even to go out and watch them play. And so we had that bit of time where we were finished. We were waiting on the final, and St. Francis weren't. That's what I meant by the pressure being on them.
We'll get back to the final itself in a moment, Pete, but let's just talk about your run, first of all. And I know one of the funny stories, because you obviously were giant-killing along the way. The big win was obviously, as Pat mentioned, was in the semi-final against Bowes. But you do have a funny story about the victory over Cove Ramblers as well, which turned out to be Roy Keane's last game as a Cove Ramblers player.
Yeah, it was... We went down to Cove in the first game and we drew 2-2. Actually, Roy scored in that match. And we didn't... I have to be honest, like, he didn't really stand out in either game for us. Now, against us. Now, maybe his mind was on Notts Forest because he had been over there. And as far as I was concerned, and I checked this out, he was actually illegal to play against us. Because in those days, as far as I remember... And I stand corrected here, you had to be 8 weeks. There was a rule whereby you couldn't come back and play for your club for 8 weeks, I think it was at the time. But I remember Gabriel Egan ringing me up and asked me about this. And I just said, no, let him play, he's only a kid. So we played him up in Baldonnell then, and we beat him very well on the day. There's no doubt about that. But for me, over the two legs, Greg Coleman looked a far better player than Roy Keane. But show you what I know.
I was going to say, Pete, remind me not to ask you for your opinion about future stars, okay?
But absolutely.
You did remind him, though. You met him a few years later, did you, Mr. Keane? And you reminded him.
Yeah, I met him at an Opel pre-Opel award in the Burlington. And I was in there with my wife. We had been over at the blood bank and we had went in there for a drink. And Roy was in there. And I went up to the bar. And he was standing there with a few of the Irish lads. And I just said, how are you, Roy? And I asked him, did you remember me? And he said, no. And I said, well, you know, you called me a lot of bad names in the pitch down in Cove. And he said, no, I don't remember you at all. So I said, well, we're the team that beat you 3-0 in the semi-final or in the quarter-final replay. And he said, no, I don't remember you. So that was a put down for me.
And that was it? Was it nice and short?
It was nice and short and snappy. Yeah. It was. So it sent me away with my tail between my legs. And
he may have sent you away with your tail between your legs, but you had the victory, and I presume that was all that mattered.
Yeah, absolutely. But so, look, there's a lot of water under the bridge then. But it's funny the way Pat mentioned there, training in Lansdowne Road. We actually trained in Lansdowne Road too, but he's right in what he said. It was mad for us the day before the wedding, because there was a TV crew here in the house with me, And they were doing a documentary, an RTE documentary for the Field of Dreams. And they spent the whole day here with us, and me and the family. And then that day also, one of our players got married. And we had hired out a bus to bring us out to Selbridge just to acknowledge Trevor and his bride. And then we came back, went home, got up the next morning. We had to bring two players for physio. And then we had to, because we'd been playing a lot of games, and then we had to go over to Francis Street where we were leaving from. So that was mayhem over there. So there's a lot of things went on. And then we got to the final, we got to the ground itself, done our book, everything else. And then Tommy O'Neill, the doc, came in and told us that the match was being held up for 15 minutes because of the crowd outside. It was supposed to be the first all-seater final in the FAI's history, but it wasn't because they had to open the terraces to let the crowd in. And that was another distraction. But then, you know, overall, we were well beaten on the day. I mean, a 3-0 scoreline shows up. But we gave away two penalties in that game, so we didn't really help ourselves. But Bray deserved to win.
But Pat, if we do talk about that crowd Pete is referring to there and about how the game was held up because of it, is it not true that you were actually afraid there wouldn't be any crowd whatsoever? Because it was, as you said, it was first game, first final ever to be held at Lansdowne Road. Bray Wanderers and St Francis back then wouldn't have had much of a support, certainly not one that you'd expect to fill the National Stadium.
Well, you know, the year before, the 1988-89 season, we had got to the semi-final against Cork, and we actually had a special train from Bray all the way down, which, you remember the comments about in the meeting, it was called the Gandhi train. They were hanging out the doors and hanging out windows, and it was an unbelievable crowd down in Floridge. I think we brought 2,000 fans down. Now, we got beaten after three games in that game. We had a very experienced team, and we were sort of, you know, looking forward to the game against St. Francis and looking forward to the Lansdowne. But did we think that would be 34,000? No. But we did think there would have been a big crowd, because even like what Pete said about St. Francis, we went back out to Bray to leave from there. And the amount of people, not just in Bray, but all the way out from County Dublin, like Southside, all the way in, it was just unbelievable. And then when we came into Falls Bridge, you could just see, like, the atmosphere was incredible, the amount of bodies around the place. But we still didn't even contemplate, because when we got into the dressing room, obviously all we wanted to do was get out, do our warm-up and get ready. And then it was unbelievable what happened, because, like what Pete said, Tony O'Neill came in and he said, "Pat, could I have a word?" And I went outside, and he said, "Look, we're going to have to put off the kick-off time here for a while," he says. And he showed me up to the monitor, and there was thousands of people queuing up. And I said, "This is unbelievable." I said, "Do what you have to do, Tony." I said, "We'll go back in and do what we have to do." So I went into the lads. I said, "Look, lads, take your time here. We're going to be a little bit delayed." And one of them said, "Why?" I said, "Well, there's a lot of people trying to get in outside." But when we walked out, and I'm sure Pete will be the same, you know, it was quite incredible. And it was the year we brought our mascots as well. We had a mascot for each player at the time, and it was quite unique what happened. And I know fans are there, but when we walked out and seen it was about 34,000 people in there, and it was all green and white, which is quite amazing because, as you know, St. Francis are green and white, and so are we. So we were playing in plain white that day in green, and it was just fantastic occasion. And I mean, the atmosphere, I mean, I had cousins from up around the Liberties who were actually supporting St. Francis, and like, you were delighted I won it, but I cousins who were living there wanted to see Francis win it. So there was a lot of that, and there was a lot of stories about people from, you know, Martin Nugent was from his family, from the Liberty, and John Ryan had great friends. So it was a fantastic occasion. And as I said, I just think, you know, people, on the day, you know, we've done our homework, and no disrespect to St. Francis in any shape or form. I think the big difference in the two teams on the day was we got the bit of luck and we took it. And that's what the cup is all about.
Yeah, and just to go back to the crowd before we continue on that train of thought. Pete, was an awful lot of it that people within the Liberties who perhaps wouldn't always be coming out and supporting St Francis when they were involved in matches, did they just really, really just get behind the team for that day?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you the truth, Joanne, we had about 100 spectators on a week-to-week basis. And I think what happened was there were so many people associated with the Liberties down through the years who maybe had moved out to the suburbs. And then we also tapped into the junior football support element of it, which we all know is, you know, it's a big, big grade of football. So I think they all identified with us and they came out. Just, it was a kind of a novelty final as well to the non-league team. And a lot of the people who came, I think, kind of identified in some shape or form with us through the junior leagues and all that kind of stuff. But it was absolutely incredible, really. I don't think nobody could have had reckoned on that kind of a crowd. We were hoping, and I think, to be fair to Pat, I think he was on record as saying that he did expect a big crowd to attend.
I can't imagine... Sorry, Pete, go on.
But to get 33,000, 34,000 there was beyond anybody's expectations.
And what was it like when you came out, and what was it like for the players when they came out, and there was, I presume, there was a lot of noise?
Yeah, well, I have a photograph, actually. I don't know where it is now, but it's upstairs somewhere, I'm sure. And we've been introduced to Bertie Ahern before the game, and you could see the fear in our and the surprise in our players' faces. They were absolutely petrified, and I think you know, as I said earlier, all the stuff that happened before the game, and we were ready to go, kind of at 5-3, and then we were stretching in the dressing room. We were trying to, you know, do different things to focus the players, but no, they certainly froze at that particular moment, and then we didn't start the game off too well. But we got into it, and it was nil all until obviously the first goal was crucial, and the first goal really settled Bray and put us under pressure then, and we had one great chance in the first half where we could have equalised, except for the referee gave offside. But what, I don't know, because we've looked at it a lot of times since, and the player breaking through on goal wasn't offside. But anyway, that's another. There was no VAR in those days, and that was the only real chance we had in the first half. And then Bray got a great goal. John Ryan got a brilliant second goal for Bray, and then the penalty. Then and sure, we were dead. We were flat on our feet at that stage. And it was just, as I said earlier, Bray fully deserved to win in the end. And we were actually, you know, of all the, you know, we could identify with Bray, and the late secretary, John O'Brien, was a good friend of ours. And we were kind of, if anybody was going to beat us in the final, we were kind of glad it was Bray, because I had friends, Eddie Wallace, who was probably my best friend. He was involved with Bray for a long time. And I had good rapport with Bray. And it was great that it was them that beat us, if anybody's going to beat us.
Well, Pat, just tell us about what a win of that magnitude meant to a club like Bray, who, as you said, only 5 years previously had been non-league themselves.
Yeah, it did change Bray as a club. I obviously, you know, we were thrilled with the whole thing and winning, but we didn't realise what the win was going to, you know, how it was going to affect us. And it affected us in many, many different ways, because obviously financially everybody thought that, you know, we got a windfall, and I'm sure Pete will explain it. The windfall that we got was not anywhere near what we thought we were getting. So that was that. And then players' expectations grew. Did the club grow with it? It didn't really at the time, because, you know, we had got somewhere before our time, and we felt could we build on it and make the club a better club. And it certainly didn't happen, unfortunately. And there was different disagreements and different little things. But these things happen in football. But it was a fantastic achievement for Bray Wanderers as a club. And I really am only just talking about Bray at this moment, because to come up from the First Division and win a cup, you know, like that, it was just, like, it was unreal. The two questions I was asked many, many years ago was, well, what would you like to see for Bray? And one was, I said, to win one of the major trophies and to qualify for Europe. Well, we did, But then all of a sudden we went off to play Trabzonspor in Turkey, and that cost a lot of money at the time, and so on and so on. But to be quite honest with you, it did change the whole outlook of Bray. But thank God, and I mean this sincerely, Bray are still, you know, flying along. They're still a great club, and it does cost a lot of money. And in the times we live in now, which are very, very strange, I think it's fantastic that League of Ireland Football is still going, and there's some great clubs, and there's some great characters and great people, like Pete, because Pete went on to have a very, very good career as well, and so did I, and it changed a lot of things. I actually left Bray in 91. I went over to Rovers as technical director. So things broke up a little bit from that success. But we will never forget it, because it was so unique. And I think it wouldn't have been unique only the likes of St. Francis were in the final, because quite genuinely, they talked about fairy tales, and it was a fairy tale. But the fairy tale was on both sides. You know, the media, as I said, definitely looked at St. Francis as being the bridesmaids. But we felt the same in our own way, but we did change it. And I always remember one little funny story when we did get permission to train in Lansdowne, was that I brought the lads down to train, and I said, let's get across the pitch and run down the pitch. And I stopped in the middle, and I said, I want us to face the stands. And they said, what are we doing? I said, wave up to the empty stands, because I said, I don't want anyone waving up on Sunday. And that's a true story, and we never thought that we'd see such a crowd. We never thought it would be such an atmosphere. And I must say, even to this day, the players like John Ryan and Martin Nugent, Colin Phillips, all the lads are still in touch. And, you know, the sorry thing about it is that, and I'm sure Pete was in the same position, I had to leave two or three players out who had played all season. And to this day, I know one or two of them will never forgive me for not playing them, but we could only play 11. So, you know, where there's all lots of goodwill and there's a lot of stuff going on, there's a lot of fellas who still would say, I should have been playing that day, I should have been on the team. But we won 3-0. We've done a lot of hard work. We watched St. Francis several times. I mean, 10 times out of Ballydonald, I think I went out and watched them. But I will say this, they were a great side. And even to this day, I know some of our lads still bump into a few of the other, like Trevor Coleman, Greg Coleman, and I bump into Pete. And the respect that we had for one another on that day still holds to this day, because it was quite a unique occasion and one that will always be there in the history of the FAI Cup. And it wouldn't have happened only for St. Francis, being the non-league club who got to the final with 34,000 people there. And it's as good as winning the cup. I know Pete will never accept it, but we always say we shared the cup that day with a great team and great people. And even the people around St. Francis and around the Liberties and all. It was an unbelievable occasion. I mean, I'll never forget it. And for families, and everybody has a story to tell. But it was a fantastic occasion.
Would you believe the attendance record for an FAI Cup final was only beaten? So that set the record and was only beaten in 2018 when Dundalk beat Cork, which is an unbelievable stat. Last word to you, Pete Mahan. Can you ever see anything like that ever happening again? A cup run like St. Francis had?
I don't think so, Joanne. And I'll tell you why, because we had a very, very good team. As far as I'm concerned, it was probably one of the best junior teams ever. It came together over a time of 8 years. A lot of hard work went in. But then, unfortunately, after the Cup final, the team broke up. And I had to deal with kind of all over again in terms of our own domestic league. And we had to get another team, and we won the league. And then the powers that be in the club then made a crazy decision to go into the League of Ireland. And Francis have gone one way since. And it's very, very sad for me, who, you know, I was there for 26 years. To put that amount of time into the club and see where they are now. And, you know, while Bray went kind of from strength to strength after that, unfortunately, it took us another, three, four years to build the team back up to win the Leinster Senior League again. And we won it twice after that then, until when we made the decision then in 96 to go and replace St. James's Gate in the League of Ireland.
So many heartbreaking stories in League of Ireland football, but also so many great memories as well. And at top of that list is certainly what happened in 1990. So a huge thank you to two great men from the League of Ireland, in Pete Mahan and Pat Devon.
Thanks very much.
Sunday Sport on RTE Radio 1.